Tim Versalotti is a voice you hear on these airwaves quite often. He is a political science professor and director of the Western New England University Polling Institute. He's currently in London for a university summer program. He has had a front row seat for the so-called Brexit referendum campaign. He joins us live this morning from London. Tim, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Joe.
Good morning.
Good morning, or afternoon, depending on where you are.
That's right. You're in the afternoon, we're in the morning, but you've had a hell of a day, I assume.
Well, the whole country has. Britain woke up, or never went to sleep last night, shook off the cobwebs, and took a look at a very, very different world from when the sun went down last night, that's for sure.
So you are in the United Kingdom for a course, One Country, Four Nations, National Identities in the United Kingdom. This could not have come, I assume, for the students at a better time, because you look at these four nations, England, Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland, and what we have seen in the voting is great division, and that must be fascinating to look at with your students.
It really is. Yes, we have 15 students from Western New England University who are here studying a number of courses this summer. And in this particular course, we've spent a good bit of time talking to elected officials, academics. We went to a major debate on Brexit at Westminster last week. And this vote really highlights the stresses and strains that are associated with having a country that's really a union of four very different nations. And you just have to look at the way the vote played out across those four nations yesterday to see illustrations of those tensions.
Did you have any idea, I ask you this just as someone who is in the country, but also even as a pollster, were there indications that David Cameron would resign and would resign this quickly?
Yes and no. There were indications that if the vote went in the direction of Brexit, that he would have a difficult time staying on for very long,
right,
because the next step in the process will be for the Prime Minister to begin the negotiations to pull the UK out of the EU. And given that he had advocated staying in, it wasn't very practical for him to be in that position. But I think most people were caught off guard by the timing of it, that he elected to announce his departure today, so soon after the vote. As you look back, though, it makes sense that there really was no practical way for him to hang on. And so it makes a lot more sense for him to step back, set in motion the process of choosing a new prime minister, thereby allowing the country to get on with what is going to be a very complicated process of withdrawing from the EU.
One of the things that we've been discussing this morning is the possibility of buyer's remorse, that in some way there will be a backlash to this vote, especially since, yes, 4 percentage points, but it was still close and the people were very divided on it. Do you get a sense of that this afternoon in England?
Yes, 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 there is. And during the rhetoric, during the debates, the Remain folks said there's no turning back. You have to think this through. And there were some very broad, open-ended questions that the Leave campaign could not answer and said, well, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. And so in terms of dealing with immigration, for example, what will be the scheme that will be put into place of the open borders policy? Also dealing with trade, not just with the EU, but with the United States. What will be put in place of the current trade negotiations that are going on? Those are open questions. And we've already started to see some fallout. One of the leaders of the the Vote Leave campaign, Boris Johnson, the former mayor of London,
yes,
now a member of parliament, was booed as he left his home this morning. And more significantly, Scotland has already said that it's very likely that it will hold another independence referendum, because Scotland voted overwhelmingly to stay in the EU, and leaders there feel as if Scotland is being pulled out of the EU against its own will.
When you look at this, especially with your students, and let's look at it from a polling aspect, the exit polls were pretty accurate. The polls beforehand, most that I saw anyway, leading up to the vote, indicated that those voting to remain would ultimately prevail. Do you have thoughts on that, of what happened?
I do have a couple of thoughts here. And as part of the course, we did meet with individuals from one of the polling firms in London, Ipsos Mori, and we talked about the challenge of putting together a likely voter model, which I've talked about with you and your colleagues in the past,
yes,
trying to anticipate who will show up. There hasn't been a national referendum in the UK on EU membership since 1975, when the country voted to join. And so the challenge has been figuring out who would show up to vote. What polling firms learned from the general election in the UK in 2015 was that they underestimated the number of working class folks who would show up and vote Conservative. They lowballed the percentage of the vote that the Conservative Party would receive. And so pollsters were tweaking their models to try and account for that, because less educated male working class folks were most likely to support leaving the EU. And yet those models still didn't capture. Part of the dynamic that the models may not have captured were the number of Labour Party voters who voted to leave as well, despite the Labour Party advocating for a vote to remain. And so there will be a significant postmortem from the polling firms, and there is a polling council for the UK to get a sense of what happened.
We just had economist Hugh Johnson on with us, and one of the questions that I asked him that I will ask you is about what we can extrapolate from what happened in the UK, especially when it comes to polling, as well as action to the coming election, presidential election in the United States in just 4.5 weeks.
It's telling. Donald Trump is here in the UK today,
yes,
opening a golf course at Turnberry. And I think a lot of people who follow politics on both sides of the Atlantic have looked at the Brexit vote and noted you can't underestimate or minimize the amount of frustration that is out there from an important segment of the electorate, white working class, typically men, who feel like they've been left behind by this globalized economy. They turned out, they raised their voices in the UK, and the consequence, while it is a surprise, it's also a lesson for those of us following the American presidential election, that to underestimate or minimize or downplay that voter frustration would be to risk overlooking a very important dynamic in the upcoming presidential election. Now, the candidates, and I'm thinking in particular of the Clinton campaign, she's surrounded by lots of smart people, and I would think they would be mistaken if they did not study the Brexit vote very, very closely and the rhetoric of the campaigns on both sides to get a sense of how to address this frustration and anger in a way that doesn't create the kind of surprising outcome that we saw in the UK.
One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, and I alluded to at the beginning of our conversation, given that your course looks at the four nations, England, Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland and Scotland voted in favor of remaining, which of course raises the specter that the United Kingdom itself may break apart. Talk a little bit about that and really how that fits into what you and your students are studying this semester.
Sure. If you ask someone, where are you from? Mm-hmm. The answer will tell you an awful lot about how they view themselves in relation to their government and to the country in which they live. And when pollsters have asked people in the UK, what do you see yourself as? The percentage who see themselves exclusively as British, this sort of combined identity that comes from the four nations, that percentage has dropped. And the percent identifying themselves as English, Scottish, Northern Irish, or Welsh has gone up in recent years. And so it's an indicator of this rising sense of nationalism. And the UK government has been cognizant of that and has sent power down to Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland, creating national assemblies in Wales and Northern Ireland, the Scottish Parliament in Scotland, giving those areas more autonomy, more lawmaking authority, knowing that the only way to keep the country together is to begin to send some of that power out from London to the other parts of the country. But these are forces that are sometimes hard to contain through policymaking and through giving authority to take on certain policy areas. So in Scotland, the national identity there is very strong, has been strong for some time, and it seems like only a matter of time before they have another independence referendum. And now this EU vote certainly makes that even more probable. Northern Ireland is a very different situation. You've got the legacy of the Troubles there, the clash between the majority Protestant and the minority Catholic in Northern Ireland. With this EU Brexit vote, now we see a border form between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, where crossing that border has been very straightforward until the prospects of now. The Republic of Ireland will now be in Europe, whereas Northern Ireland will not be in Europe. And so you will have to have a resumption of border controls, checkpoints, and that summons up a really terrible set of memories for people in Northern Ireland. And so what had been a fairly stable place in recent years, now all of a sudden there's an element of instability injected as a result of the Brexit vote.
Tim Versalotti is a political science professor and director of the Western New England University Polling Institute, a frequent guest on this program. He's in London for a university summer program. And Tim, it's been a great pleasure to have you join our broadcast this morning. Thank you so much for taking
the
time
out. I've enjoyed it, Joe. Thanks a lot.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Coming up next, we'll talk with a reporter from the BBC World News next on the Roundtable.